Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hopefully, by me saying that I'm not always confident is a great indicator to people that confidence isn't a one and done. You don't just achieve it. It's not an end goal that you cross a finish line and you're done. So even now, of course, I have a lot of moments that I don't feel confident. So what are the skill sets and what are the blueprints and what are the tactics that I go to when I need to feel good enough to take that first step? And that's really the key for me. Confidence is the end goal. It's the byproduct of taking action.
I'm Doug Bopes, personal trainer, best-selling author, and entrepreneur, and I'm on a mission to help others become the best version of themselves. So I'd like to welcome you to the Adversity Advantage podcast, where we will help you use obstacles, failures, and setbacks to give you that edge needed for success. I'll be interviewing people from all walks of life on how they overcame trials and turned them into triumphs. So please sit back, relax, and get ready to be absolutely blown away by some of the wisdom and stories you're about to hear.
Welcome back to another episode of the Adversity Advantage. I'm your host, Doug Bopst. And today's guest is Lisa Bilyeu. Lisa is the co-founder of Impact Theory and the host of Women of Impact. Today on the show, we discuss why Lisa thinks 90% of relationships fail, how to develop the confidence to walk away from a relationship that's not serving you, what types of people are magnets for toxic partners, how Lisa and Tom prioritize a relationship when busy, how to develop radical trust with your partner, hard relationship truths you need to hear, and so much more. So let's get this conversation going and welcome Lisa Bilyeu to the Adversity Advantage podcast. Lisa, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited for today.
Likewise, I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. And I think my first question is this. On your show, Women of Impact, you've interviewed some of the smartest people in the world when it comes to relationships. If you had to guess based on that, like why like 90% of relationships fail today, what do you think that would be?
Oh, I just literally interviewed the Gottmans. So Dr. Julie and Dr. John Gottman from the Gottman Institute, and they've been doing studies in science and studying couples and their behavior over periods of 20, 30, 40 years. And what are the identifying factors that make relationships last versus what are the identifying factors that actually indicate a relationship is going to fail? And one of the things is, over time, you start to build contempt. And that's what they call one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And that's the most dangerous one. And so when you think about a relationship, when you first meet someone, you've got all the oxytocin, you guys are loving each other, you've got all the fun and new things. And so all the issues that may come up, all the annoying things that the person may do, it doesn't really annoy you because you've got all this beautiful love juice that's flowing through you. But over time, as you start to grow, as you start to change, as you start to have goals and dreams and you go on different paths, how do you communicate? How do you adapt and evolve together? And that's been a big key for me and Tom, is that we adapt and evolve together. But I think a lot of couples don't. And so what happens is you're not the same person you were at the age of 20 and at the age of 30. You're not the same person you are at the age of 30 that you are at the age of 40. So now imagine you've got a relationship that you start to build. You start from love, excitement, but you don't have the communication. Over time, your communication just breaks it down more and more. And so according to the Gottmans, contempt starts to evolve. Now, contempt can look at things, be things like rolling of the eyes, the, you know, the tisking of people. Now, that isn't an almost a verbal thing that you can maybe have a discussion with, right? If we were dating and you rolled your eyes at me, or we were together and you rolled your eyes at me, I could maybe call you on the roll eyes, or typically what I'll do is ignore it. Right? Most people are like, whatever. You do those eye rolls enough, they say that there's 5-1 of good versus bad that will make a relationship last or not. So if you do an eye roll once, you need to give your partner at least 5 other compliments in order to outweigh the one eye roll that you've given. So now imagine over time, as couples start to evolve and get together longer and longer, you ignore the eye rolls, the contempt starts to build, and then it comes to a point where you start to argue about stuff that actually you're not really arguing about. So you argue about, you know, the dishes. And that one thing that you argued about where it's like, eh, it doesn't really matter about the dishes. 5 years later, you are now having a freaking screaming match at each other about the dishes. But it's not about the dishes. It's about the contempt that has built up that then leads to the explosion on something else. So I think when it comes to looking at 90% of relationships, how they fail, why relationships fail, it's the slow burn. It's the slow thing that happens over time. I call it the water that drops on the, you know, the rocks that eventually changes its shape. Like over time, if a water just drips on a rock, the rock will change its shape. So now think about that being negativity on your mindset and your self-esteem and how you feel about yourself. That negativity that the person's dripping on you eventually changes who you are. It makes you more angry. It makes you more contemptuous towards them. And so as you can see, it starts to then spiral. So then you blink and you go from being in love to then literally screaming matches.
And so you and Tom have been married for a long time. You've evolved a lot together. You've grown and scaled some massive businesses, but you both are so incredibly busy and you both wear so many different hats, you know, in the businesses. How do you make those shifts to come back as a couple and focus on the relationship and prioritize the relationship as, you know, life and business is so busy?
Yeah. So first of all, I would definitely start with exactly what you said. You have to prioritize the relationship. And that needs to be, you have to have a verbal agreement with your partner to make sure you're on the same page. But then the next part is you have to identify what does prioritizing mean? Because I actually spend more hours on my business than I do on my relationship. So there's a difference between prioritizing your time on a day-to-day basis and prioritizing something when they come into conflict. So when I have a problem in my business and if I had the problem in my relationship and they happened at the same time, I'm not conflicted. I prioritize my relationship 1,000%. Tom would do the same. But on a day-to-day, we actually show up more for the business. So that's where you have to get in the nitty-gritty and actually start to communicate the small little details that come with how do you prioritize. So that's number one. Number two, it's kind of like a job because we run a business together. Me and my husband, we definitely talk about like our relationship, kind of like jobs, how we approach things. So just like a business, in our relationship, we both have certain skill sets that we're better at and other skill sets that we're not. And so what we do is we look to our characteristics. And I said, okay, I'm actually better at identifying sooner when Tom and I are starting to drift apart. Number one, because I actually have a shorter threshold than he does. So he could probably go like a month without a date and he'd be fine. I can probably go 2 weeks without a date and I'd be fine. After that 2 weeks, I start to feel the distance, but he doesn't. I don't take that personally. I just address the honesty that we're two different people and we have different ways of receiving love. And so I don't take that personally, but because of that, we agreed that I was the person that was going to wave the flag when we start to drift apart because he doesn't feel it as soon. So again, we just had that agreement that I was that person that was going to do that. Then the second part of that agreement is he must reciprocate. So if I wave the flag, he must immediately drop everything. I mean, not on the spot, right? But if I say to him, hey, I'm really feeling the distance. It's been a few weeks. I need date night. He would say, absolutely. What do you need me to do? So those little things that we have in our personal life that we then echo into our business has allowed us to know the response. Who's the responsible party? Who's the responsible party to wave the flag when we're finding the distance? Who's the responsible party to address it? How do we address it? What do? We just broke everything down. We got so nitty gritty, just like we do in our business. We did that in our personal life. And the reason is that no one takes a chance for their business to hope to succeed. Right? You set goals, you set priorities, you set to-do lists. But for some reason, we don't do that in our personal life. And you better believe I'm willing to work way harder at my relationship than I am at my business. So if I'm doing this work in my business, I absolutely will do twice as much work, twice as much communication, twice as much planning on the relationship side. And that has precisely been how we've been together for 23 years and built multiple companies and lived in separate countries. And all the things that we've endured is because we've done that kind of breakdown of being honest with each other, assigning responsible parties, and then making sure our communication with the words that we use are understood. So, and what I mean by that is if I say to my husband, it's important, I use that word important to him, he knows it actually means he has to drop everything. Now, here's the key. I probably use the word important with him twice a year. But we've made an agreement that if I need him and something really is important, I'm going to use that word. And if I use that word, it means that he stops what he does and he pays attention. And so, yeah, just being very clear on our communication is that third piece that has really enabled us to be together for so long.
People see you all online now and they may assume that things have always been sunshines and roses with you two. But I know that's not the case from reading your book and just watching content and interviews that you've done. I know there was a point where you kind of lost yourself in Tom's plan and the vision for what you both were wanting to create. I know there was a point where you were unhappy as a stay-at-home wife and you felt like you were lacking purpose and meaning. How did you, I mean, not just find the courage to find your voice, because I think obviously that's challenging, but how did you do it in a way that wasn't destroying your marriage and relationship? Because I think a lot of times when people, like, they're like, oh, I found myself, I'm tired of being like walked all over, I'm done, it's like I'm going to take over, and they end up destroying their relationship.
It's so true. And this, I was so aware of that, that it made me realize I had to really have a plan, going back to like business plans. I had to have a plan on how I was going to approach it with the goal of me and my husband staying together. So number one was I just owned that the 8 years that I was an unhappy housewife, and I want to make sure people hear me, it's not that a housewife is bad, it's that it wasn't my dream. So living a life that isn't your dream, let's kind of like encompass it there. I did that for 8 years. Number one, I had to own that was on me. I didn't speak up. I didn't tell Tom that I was unhappy. I was the one that chose to people please. I was the one that chose to sacrifice. So I had to take ownership over that. Secondly, I had to take ownership over that. I didn't communicate that with him. So that was really step number one, is go up to him and be honest about the fact that I was miserable. I felt like I'd given up on my dreams. And now I was starting to find myself again. And I had to communicate that that was on me so that he didn't feel badly. The other part was to acknowledge that I was changing. I was the one that told him when we first got married that I wanted 4 children. I was the one that decided I didn't want children. So I had to approach him with grace that of course he's going to have a reaction. I think sometimes when you build your confidence, you think that, okay, I'm going to go in and I'm like, this is who I am and this is what it's going to be like and, you know, like it or lump it. It's like, okay, going back to the goal, is that going to bring my husband closer to me or further away? It's going to make him feel disrespected. It's going to make him feel dismissed, like his opinion doesn't matter. And I really believe that when you're in a relationship, you have to listen to your partner's opinions. And so I went in there saying, I'm going to express to him how unhappy I was. I'm going to express to him how happy I now am. I'm finding myself. I'm finding my confidence. And then I'm going to give him space to be honest with how he feels. I'm going to give him space to be honest, to say all the hard things to me. And then I'm going to finally give him time to grieve. And what I mean by that is grieve the wife that I was. I was putting out clothes for him every single day. I mean, to the point where he was waking up, his clothes would be next to him. He would get changed. He would go to the gym. He'd come back from the gym. His clean clothes were waiting for him. He'd leave for work. I would hand him a lunchbox. He would come home from work. His dinner was on the table. Like I really prided myself on being a very good, you know, traditional, I would say, Greek housewife. But I never wanted to do that anymore. Now, when you do that for 8 years, for me to turn around and say to him, no, well, now you're just on your own, is actually disrespecting him again on the transition that we're going through. So in order to him, for me to bring him into my life, my world, the way that I needed to approach things, I said, I'll give you space. I'll give you the time to grieve the wife that I was. And so here's a suggestion. And so I laid out a plan for him. And I said, what if I cook and clean for you this week, 7 days, like I normally do? Next week, I'll do it only 6 days. The week after, I'll do it for 5 days. And then the week after, I'll do it for 4. And I'll wean you off me taking care of you from a traditional standpoint. How does that feel? And he felt heard. He felt respected. And then, because I was like, you know, I eventually won't do, you know, do laundry. But once I broke it down, once he started to feel all those things, he just turned around to me and said, babe, what kind of husband would I be if I put clean underwear ahead of my wife's happiness? And so now he felt good about the fact that he was accepting not having necessarily clean underwear, to the point that one day he was going to work, and it was like one day, early days at Quest, and he was going to work and I hadn't done the laundry because we were so busy. Quest was growing so quickly that the last thing I was thinking about is doing the laundry. And he literally yelled from the other room. He's like, "Babe, I don't have clean underwear, so I'm going commando. Bye." And he felt so good about himself that he felt like he was supporting me by going to work without without underwear. So that's what commando is. You go without underwear. He felt good about himself. So now imagine I handled it a different way. I came in telling him, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. You're going to have to like it and lump it. Do you think that eventually when he finds that he doesn't have clean underwear, that he's going to be happy about it? He's going to be in his own world, because we all take things personally, whether we want to or not. So those were really the key things that I did in order to bring us together in this moment that really could have ripped most couples apart.
I know one of the other things that's been really helpful for you is finding your own mission and purpose. And a lot of that has come through your podcast and your content and your book. And I know that your purpose is like you're waking up and trying to inspire, like you're trying to reach the 14-year-old Lisa. Why is that?
I think it was Mother Teresa that said, not everybody will fight for the masses, but everyone will fight for the one. And what that means is who do you wake up for every day and fight for? Now, for me, I need to fight for something or someone. I need that pull that when I feel insecure, when I don't feel like I'm good enough, when I don't feel like I have the skill set, when I feel like I'm going to be mocked or teased or bullied for doing something, or, you know, that internal negative voice that's like, well, Lisa, you're not good enough. Why on earth are you going to do it? I need something to go back to as my North Star, is what I like to call it. I need that pull. And so what's that emotional pull that gets you past your own ego? What's that emotional pull that gets you out of your own head and propels you forward? And so at Quest, it was my mom. I grew up with a mom that was borderline anorexic. And then as an adult, she pivoted and fluctuated into being morbidly obese. And so every day as we're building Quest, and I didn't feel good enough every day, I felt imposter syndrome. I had been a housewife for 8 years and I was thrown into an incredibly fast startup. And so I was facing my inadequacies every day. And so I had to have a North Star. And so that North Star was my mum. I don't want to do this. I don't know how to do this. Well, okay. Are you going to help your mum? Yes or no, Lisa? And every time I would think of my mum, I would then propel myself forward. So as I started to realize, we were dealing with the body with Quest. That was amazing. As we pivoted into impact theory and women of impact and my book on confidence, it started to be, who is that one that I can actually wake up to every morning and fight for, even when I don't feel good enough? And I realized it was the 14-year-old Lisa. It was the 14-year-old that wished I had the content that I create now when I didn't feel like I was deserving of anything, when I didn't, you know, I was bullied and teased by, sadly, other women, other girls. So every morning now I wake up and I think to myself, if I don't overcome this, if I don't overcome this hurdle, if I don't overcome this failure, if I don't overcome this inadequacy, then you're not going to help that 14-year-old girl that really needs you, Lisa. And you better believe that's just a strong enough North Star that nothing has stopped me.
I love to hear that. And I know that, like, you know, before you've done this reinvention of yourself, you fell into the traps of like people pleasing, not having good boundaries, trying to fit in, you know, doing things for the wrong reasons, being afraid to stand up for yourself. What are some of the other biggest like self-sabotaging habits that you think are destroying people's lives?
I think the validation that we don't actually even realize. So we get, we all want to feel good about ourselves. And so sometimes we'll do something that makes us feel good, but we actually don't like the thing itself. And what I mean by that is I got stuck for 8 years being a stay-at-home wife because I was told, oh my God, you're such an amazing stay-at-home wife. Everybody was giving me accolades. My dad was so proud of me, you know, like, oh, my Greek daughter has been, you know, a good wife. So my dad was proud of me. My mum was proud of me. My husband definitely liked it. And so I was getting validation of being a stay-at-home wife. And so when I started to, that's the hard thing, I think, that really keeps people, because you get stuck because you are getting something out of being stuck. Like, take off those, you know, the blinders and just look at why you're stuck and what that validation piece is. And so what I realized was I had such low self-esteem that I was holding on to something that didn't serve me, didn't serve my dreams, and it didn't serve my future, but it sure as hell filled up my heart from the validation standpoint. And what I realized is in order to make the pivot, I had to find ways to build the validation within myself instead of seeking it from external sources. And I think that that holds people back so much because a mother likes to feel like a good mother. A wife wants to feel like a good wife, hopefully, right? Where whatever that thing is, you want to feel good about yourself. And so that was one thing I really realized that enabled me to make that pivot and to stop people pleasing. And instead of someone else saying, oh my God, thank you, Lisa, you're so amazing. And that's where I get my validation from. What can I do every day to build my validation so that when I realize I'm doing something I don't want, I can actually stop it before I get to the point where I then get sucked back in. And so that really became, okay, what are the things that you can do? I love working out. All right, Lisa, do a challenge for yourself. Tell yourself that you're going to do 30 push-ups and work on the 30 push-ups. And every day you're going to be proud of yourself that you showed up. That's building your validation, telling yourself that you're going to be the type of person that is going to say the hard thing to your partner, even when it's not easy. Okay, I did it. That built validation within myself that I can do the hard things. And so we started to put like lists together of all the things that I can approach that is just me. That's the key. It has to be just you. It can't be tied to someone else because it has to be either you did it or you didn't. You can't use excuses of like, oh, but so-and-so didn't show up, so I wasn't able to. No, either you did it or you didn't. And every time you say, I did it, it builds that validation piece that allows you to then feel confident enough to be able to then, like I said, say no to the people-pleasing, set the boundaries when it doesn't actually align with you. And I'm not saying any of this is easy. I am a student and I love to freaking grow and learn every single day. And so when I said, oh, okay, validation, let me set a boundary on something that doesn't make me feel good. I don't know how to set a boundary. So I'm like, how do I set a boundary? Let me do my research. And so listening to a podcast on setting a boundary is a step in building my validation because I know that now I'm doing the things that I promised myself I would do.
So I want to get into the conversation of confidence and radical confidence because I think obviously this is a big part of your work and your message right now. And so many people struggle to build confidence. They think they can just like stand in the mirror and say, I'm enough, I'm good enough. And all of a sudden, you know, they're going to become more confident. What do you think is the blueprint to building radical confidence from somebody who's like on the couch, completely unhappy, lost, miserable, and they want to get to Lisa Bilyeu, who's, you know, this boss who's like incredibly confident, setting boundaries, doing away with people pleasing and everything else?
Well, so hopefully by me saying that I'm not always confident is a great indicator to people that confidence isn't a one and done. You don't just achieve it. It's not an end goal that you cross a finish line and you're done. So even now, of course, I have a lot of moments that I don't feel confident. So what are the skill sets and what are the blueprints and what are the tactics that I go to when I need to feel good enough to take that first step? And that's really the key for me. Confidence is the end goal. It's the byproduct of taking action. And I just want to repeat that so your audience really, it really sinks in. Confidence is the byproduct of taking action. So people wait for the confidence usually to then act. And it's the other way around. And I think that we are doing ourselves a disservice to wait to feel confident. Now, just telling somebody, well, just do it anyway, is not understanding why people don't actually do it anyway. And again, it's because you think that you want to feel good. When I feel good enough, then I'm going to do it. So here's something I want to pose to your audience. What if that when never comes? What if it never comes? Are you happy? Do you want to live your life the way it is? And again, this is your life. You need to answer it for yourself. But if the answer is no, then great. Now you know you just have to make a change. Okay, so how do you make that change? How do you do those acts in order to build the confidence? You have to identify what you're trying to work towards. So if you're sitting on a couch and you're saying, I want to have the confidence like Lisa, in what? In business, in relationships, because it is different. The way I build my confidence in business is very different than how I build my confidence in my relationship. It's very different than how I build my confidence with my family. to speak up and set boundaries with them. So identifying what you actually want confidence in is going to be key. Like, know your end goal. And then write some stepping stones in order to get there. So that's the easy one that I give the example to is really, let's say, working out. People, let's say somebody really wants to get fit. They've heard why health is really important. They understand the importance of movement, but they just don't feel good enough. They don't feel good enough to go to the gym, to pick up some weights, to, you know, be confident enough to put on those Spanx or whatever, and, you know, that tank top and go to the gym. Okay, that's very valid. But at least you've got a goal. You know exactly what you're trying to get to. You want to get to have confidence in the gym. Step number one, maybe you just have to buy your sneakers. Step two, maybe you drive to your local gym and you buy the membership. Step three, maybe you just search and see where the parking is. Step four, maybe you walk in and you walk one lap around the gym. That's how you'll eventually get to the point where you can show up at the gym, pick up the weights, wear those sexy, you know, Spanx or whatever that you've been dying to wear, and then you feel good about yourself. It has to be a stepping stone. It has to be little by little by little, because just saying do it anyway, it will be so overwhelming for people, they don't actually know how to start. And so this literally is what I do with everything. I look at my business, I look at leadership, I look at my relationship and say, what am I trying to do? What's the blueprint? What's that first step that I need to do to get there? How do I feel about myself? Great, Lisa, you just bought your sneakers. I can feel damn good that I told myself today I was going to buy sneakers for the gym. And that's the validation piece again. You're starting to build that validation in yourself that gives you just enough confidence to turn up at the gym that eventually leads to competence. You do something enough, it leads to competence that then leads you to building your confidence.
So I think a lot of people they find it easy in many ways to build confidence in various areas of their lives. I think the one area they really struggle with is relationships. It's like they can be confident in the gym, they can be confident at work, they can be confident with their family. But once they get into a romantic relationship, like everything goes out the window at times. And I know you talk a lot about relationships, and I know like the new chapter in your book is about this. How can people develop the confidence to walk away from a relationship that's not serving them?
Oh, yeah. So thank you. This was one of those things that I couldn't believe it wasn't a chapter originally in my book. And then when I realized and started to do kind of my own deep dive and research in my audience and my community, it's the relationship piece. It's like you can be a beast in business. You can set boundaries. You can feel good about yourself. You go into the gym, you freaking crush it. And then you have a bad relationship and all of a sudden your confidence is in the toilet. And so I was like, wow, we really have to identify this piece that is really holding us back. And I think that what happens is we end up, the people that it ends up really denting their confidence, in my experience, is people who have been in manipulative relationships, where over time, again, going back to that drip, that water that drips enough on a stone that ends up it changing its shape. You think about manipulation like that. You think about that in a relationship over time, where someone diminishes you, someone puts you down, someone puts a negative, keeps saying negative comments. So what happens is you just shrink yourself a little. You shrink yourself a little more. You start to speak up maybe, and the person puts you down again. So you're like, well, it doesn't matter. Maybe I just won't speak up. Maybe I just won't push back. Oh my God, that argument was so bad. I don't ever want that to happen again. So maybe I just won't say what I need. Maybe I just won't ask for this. Maybe, maybe, maybe. And over time, just like that rock changes its shape, you end up changing yours. So you have this confidence and it's literally withered away. And it is really about identifying the type of relationship you're in. I don't want to just label everybody toxic. I think that it's very important to just, you know, it's becoming a little clickbait with toxic and narcissism. And I think it is important to assess, is it actually toxicity and narcissism, or is your partner going through a really rough patch? You know, if your partner's just lost their job, if someone in their family's just died, it's like, yes, they're going to be hard to live with for a while if they're dealing with health issues. So the first thing is to separate the thing that's a temporary issue where they're being a little mean. Maybe they're saying things that aren't very nice, but they're not being disrespectful, but they're not necessarily a nice person to be around. Identify, is it because they're going through something. If it's not, and they're always like that, start to identify, is it a characteristic that can evolve and change? Or to now I'm going to label, are they a narcissist and they literally cannot change? And so then once you've identified that, then it's up to you to see if you want to leave the relationship or not. I'm not here to judge anybody. There's so many reasons people stay in a relationship that isn't good for them. And they have to make that decision for themselves. And it can be kids, it can be family, it could be financial, it can be a whole host of reasons. But then you have to look at, what does life look like in 5 years if you stay with them? What does your life look like in 10 years if you stay with them? And is that a life that you want? And if the answer is no, then it starts to be, how do you leave? How do you communicate? And then again, if it was me, I would go into my research. It would be like, okay, if it's a narcissist, you can't just tell a narcissist, you're a narcissist and I'm leaving. It has to be handled in a very, that can actually be rather dangerous. And so from a verbal abuse to physical abuse. So I would do my research and I would see, how do I leave a narcissistic relationship? And I've, you know, interviewed so many amazing people. And my favorite is just Dr. Ramani, who, her work is just incredible and saves lives. She is the narcissist expert. So if anyone wants more information, they should really go check out. I do a lot of interviews with her. So that's how I would kind of break it down. And if it was just toxicity, I would find a way to, okay, can I just leave? But if they've got control of the finances, how do I try to get the control back? And what is that navigation? So there's a lot of complexity to leaving a relationship. For me, I think it would always be assessing those elements first. So I know what I'm getting into as I leave that, and then how to maneuver and navigate it. Having the tools, because if you've never done it before, if you've lost your confidence, you may feel lost. But I just want to tell people right now, you're not alone. Like, you are not alone. There's research, there's people out there that can help, there's therapy, there's my show Women of Impact. Like, there's a lot of people that can show you that you're not alone and help you find ways out. But the key is knowing you can find a way out. And it's that hope piece, the idea that you can change, you can have a different life. You've just got to believe it in order to take the action.
You just brought up, I think, everybody's worst nightmare when it comes to relationships, and that's being manipulated, being in a relationship that's toxic or very unhealthy or abusive or with a narcissist. I mean, I know you've done your own research. You've talked to various experts on the podcast. Is there like a common theme of the types of men and women that tend to get taken advantage of by people in relationships? Have you been struggling with feeling your best? Sometimes I wake up exhausted and it can completely ruin my productivity for the day. Ever since I started adding Magnesium Breakthrough to my nightly routine, I have been able to quiet my mind and get the best sleep ever. Unlike other magnesium supplements that might be giving you 1 to 2 forms of magnesium, Magnesium Breakthrough contains all 7 forms of magnesium designed to help calm your mind and help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Don't miss out on the most relaxing sleep ever with Magnesium Breakthrough. For an exclusive offer for my listeners, go to buyoptimizers.com/Doug. Again, that's buyoptimizers.com/Doug, and use promo code Doug during checkout to save 10%. And if you subscribe, not only will you get amazing discounts and free gifts, you will make sure your monthly supply is guaranteed. So again, go to buyoptimizers.com/Doug, and when you use the code Doug at checkout, you get 10% off. Now back to the show.
Yeah, so usually it's the women who are, I'm going to be a little gender specific here, but obviously it's never going to be exactly, of course. But usually women are found to be more people pleasers. And so they are going to more typically be drawn to, not be drawn to, but I think not necessarily speak up as much if there is that verbal manipulation, that verbal abuse, because you want to people please. So you don't really want to ruffle any feathers, which also means that you may not go and seek help. You may not tell your friends because you don't want to talk badly about your partner. So I think that that is a characteristic very much so that has really been something that I've noticed in women that are in these types of relationships. Also, I think, just childhood traumas. If you have certain childhood traumas where you know, you haven't been demonstrated what a healthy relationship looks like, and you've been in a relationship where your father was verbally abusive, you think of that as being normal, so you don't even question it. That's one that actually scares me the most, where it's like you don't even realize it's happening because you so much have been trained, if you will, to think that this is what a normal relationship looks like. And so anyone who has had that type of childhood trauma, that can be an indication. There's so many, sadly.
But do you think building confidence is like a great start for people in order to navigate some of this stuff? Because I feel like the more confident you are in yourself, and if you can maintain that, I mean, outside of the abusive and narcissistic people, it can be easier to know your worth and walk away if you're feeling incredibly confident about who you are as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things, I was in a verbally abusive relationship before I met Tom, and this was my first childhood sweetheart. We got together when we were 15. We were together for 4 years. And I thought that the passion and the screaming matches were a sign of affection. And I thought that was like, oh, well, that's, you know, I'm feeling the heat. This is what you see in movies where it's like the passionate lovemaking and, you know, things like that. And so I thought that that was normal. And there were acts that I look back on now that I'm like, I can't believe I thought that that was love. For instance, I went to university and my boyfriend, he didn't. And he would drive, I would drive home every weekend to see him. And one day I was talking on the phone and one of my roommates came in with with a guy, and he hears a guy's voice and he's like, who's that? And I was like, oh, it's just my roommate. And I knew he was a very jealous person. So I tried to like change the subject. Cut to 2 hours later, he turns up on my doorstep. And I think, oh my God, he's here to surprise me. How wonderful. Look at this show of affection. And he immediately starts to ransack my entire apartment, my dorm room, because he thinks I'm hiding a guy in my dorm room. Now, the crazy thing is, even after that, I still was like, wow, he must really love me so much that he drove all this way to surprise me. And he's so loving that he doesn't want that the idea of me being with another guy made him drive all this way to see me. I somehow had that behavior as an interpretation of love. And so when you talk about the confidence part of it, I didn't have the confidence at the time, and I didn't actually understand what love was. Now, when I separated from him, I spent a year figuring out who I was, how I build my confidence, what the boundaries look like, what the non-negotiables look like, what do I value, what are my morals. Those were very important things that I had to establish, and then I met Tom. So once I met Tom, it wasn't just the confidence, because the thing that, remember how we spoke earlier and we said how people can, you know, have the confidence and then they meet someone in a relationship and then it goes out the window. It is the confidence piece, but it is the ability to set the boundaries. It's the ability to have clarity on what your values, your non-negotiables are, so that when you get into the relationship, you set them up from the get-go. So that's exactly what I did with Tom. So because of my experience with my ex-boyfriend, because I'd built my confidence, I had done all the internal work to lay out what I was willing to take and what I wasn't in my next relationship. And so right from the beginning, when I first met Tom, as I started to realize we were getting serious, I was very open. I said, there's going to be two things that I'm just going to tell you from now are non-negotiable. And I'm telling you from now because I want to set our relationship up for success. You can never, ever, ever cheat on me. And you can never, ever, ever physically hit me, abuse me, ever. And you can never call me a bitch. That was like the third one, the smaller one. Basically, you can never name call. That was kind of the third one. But the first two were non-negotiable for me. And I said, look, I'm going to be very honest with you. While other people may forgive infidelity, again, zero judgment on anyone else, I need you to know I'm not the type of person that will forgive you. Because I knew what that would do to my confidence. And so I said from the get-go, this is how it's going to be. This is my boundary. And just to let you know, because this is non-negotiable, if I found out at 10:03 a.m. that you've cheated on me, 10:04, I'm out the door. So I'm not even going to give you a chance to explain. So I need you to hear that. And I'm telling you this up front. I'm telling you this so that our relationship hopefully can last. But those were things that allowed me to feel like I was bringing my confidence. I was bringing the boundaries that I had laid out. I was bringing my value system and my morals all together. And I was being very clear in my communication with him. Now, in order to do that, you have to have the confidence. So now going all the way back to your question, yes, confidence, I think, is imperative, but I don't think it's the only thing you need. Because if all you have is the confidence and you don't actually have boundaries and you don't understand your values and you don't understand your non-negotiables, over time, again, I'm just going to go back to that analogy of the water on the rock, you're going to change your shape enough that now you don't realize who you are. But if you do all the work beforehand and you have the confidence to then like really stick to your guns when you say something, you actually mean it, then I really think hopefully you set your relationship up for success. And it gave Tom the ability and the chance to be like, well, I don't agree with these. Okay, cool. Then I'm not going to marry you. And then we're going to separate. So that was kind of the discussions that we had. So yes, I do think confidence is important, but it's an accumulation of things.
And so I would imagine that the audience probably thinks that only women watch your podcast or listen to your podcast. I would bet that some men either openly or secretly do so they can as well, so they can understand women better. But for the men that don't, what do you think men are not understanding about women?
I love that you said that. So when I met my husband, the very first words he goes, oh, I need to understand women. So at the time, now again, we've been together for 23 years. He was like, I read Cosmo. And I watch Sex in the City. Those are the two things that he's like, I want to learn what women think and how women act. So I absolutely agree with you. Men should watch my show to learn exactly what women are thinking. So here's actually the truth. If I'm going to give you you have to understand your woman's cycle. Period. If you don't learn anything else, know their cycle. And what I would do is I would actually get with your partner or, you know, if you're with a woman, get together and say, I really want to support you during your cycle when moments that you feel down, when moments that you feel weak, when moments that you feel emotional, I really want to support you. And so what I suggest is maybe we do a calendar. And I think there's actually apps now that you can do this on where you can actually share like your cycle with your partner. I'm actually not 100% on that, but I'm like old school. I'm like picturing like an old calendar, right? Like a written one out and you put on the fridge. And in that calendar, you actually write out where their cycle is. Now, I've done so many interviews. In fact, go check out my interview with Mindy Pelz because we broke down a woman's cycle and how they're going to respond and act throughout the entire 28 days. And she lays out, these are the days, this is the time in your cycle that women shouldn't do Zoom calls. Or if you do 20 Zoom calls in a day, only do like 5 Zoom calls in the day. Why? Because by the 10th one, you're going to blow up, you're going to erupt, you're going to be emotional, you're going to have an emotional reaction. And now, from the guy's perspective, they don't understand what's going on because they're not in your body. And so if a guy can understand a woman's hormones, it's going to allow you to understand why we act the way we do. It's going to allow you to have discussions where it's like, if there's a hard discussion that you want to have, don't do it at a certain time in her period. She won't be able to hear you. She literally, because of the chemicals and her hormones in her body, she will not be able to receive the message you're trying to give. So if you're trying to address a problem in your relationship, you know when to do it in her cycle. So it's literally almost like a cheat sheet for any guy listening on how to approach females in your life, whether it's a partner or a friend or, you know, a mother or a sister. It really will help you understand. And then just the other content I do just allows you to understand the struggles that women go through. And I think, again, knowledge is power. And that's how I always think. It's like, I'm always trying to learn about men. There's a book called The Female Brain, actually, that really allowed me almost to understand my husband more. Because once I read the book, it's so good. Have you read it, by the way?
I have not. I'll have to check it out.
You've got to check it out. It's actually quite an old book. It's called The Female Brain. And what I realized was it explains the structure of a female brain. And it explains the difference with how a female brain is developed versus a male brain. And eventually I turned around to my husband after I read the book. I was like, babe, I'm never going to judge you anymore for not being able to find, you know, the scissors in the drawer. You know, like the joke that the women always have that men can never find anything. You open a cupboard, it's right in front of them and they can never find it. It's actually, there's scientific evidence to prove it's because of our brain structures. And so now I just literally understand my husband more. And I'm like, it's all right, babe, you can't find things because your brain structure is different.
So with all that said, so you're saying that, you know, the biggest thing men should do is understand their partner's cycle and make sure to have a conversation with them about that so that they can be on the same page and so that he can know how to support her during that time. And they can actually use that time to learn to grow instead of, you know, it causing any kind of, you know, tension in the relationship. A lot of men, I think, are often confused about what women really want in a relationship from a man. What have you found to be some of the common themes from the conversations you've had or even just in your own experience with what women actually are looking for in a man?
There's one thing and one thing alone. I'm going to really claim this. They want to be seen and heard. And what I mean by that is they don't always want you to fix something. They really don't. So when they come to you with a problem, when they come to you with an issue, if you try to just fix it, they won't feel seen and heard. And that's what you're trying to do. And so what me and Tom do is we have this whole agreement where it's like, okay, if I come to him with a problem, because this was a big conflict in our marriage, because I was like, I'm always, you know, if I'm struggling, like you're always either dismissing it. It felt like it was dismissing it, but it wasn't. But it felt like he was dismissing it because he was just like, oh, we'll just do this. It's like, what do you mean just? Like, I'm really upset about this. And he's like, well, you can do this. It's like, but you don't understand. And I would start to get emotional. And what I realized is he's trying to fix it. And I just want to be heard. And so the very first, like we just now pinky swear, the very first thing I do when I walk into a room, if I've got a problem, I'm like, babe, I just need you to listen. And then I tell him the problem. Now, sometimes if I'm emotional, I don't have the wherewithal to say that. So we've got an agreement that if I don't say it, he pauses and he says, okay, baby, do you need to be heard or do you want me to fix it in this moment? And in that moment, you have no idea. Just asking your woman, do you want to be heard and do you want me to listen and hold space for you? Or do you actually want me to help and solve it? That just asking that question will make a woman feel seen and heard. And now they feel supported. And that doesn't mean that you have to like agree with her. That doesn't mean that you have to, because sometimes Tom doesn't agree with me. He's like, this thing that you're upset about, I actually don't agree with it, you're upset. Or he doesn't say that because obviously I am having the feelings, but he'll try and convince me to have a different perspective. And here's the thing, I do want other people's perspectives, but not when I'm in that emotional state. So kind of going back to where you were saying, the one thing I really think is if you learn to say to the female in your life, I'm here for you, baby. Do you just want to be seen and heard or do you want me to help you fix it? That will already, and you have to mean it, right? You can't just say it and then just turn around and, you know, go back to your phone or your work. But that I have found has been instrumental in me and my husband's relationship.
I want to read a post that you posted just today that I think we can dive into a little bit about commitment and relationships. And I'd love for, as I read each one, for you to kind of like explain what you mean, what you meant by it. So you made a post about your commitment to Tom and how it's the biggest and highest priority in your life. And then you put like an infographic up and it said things you need to know before you commit. The first one is it's bloody hard work. What do you mean by that?
Relationships are not going to be easy. People think that you fall in love and you live happily ever after. And if I have to work at it, then it's not real love. It's like, well, you know, I think I said this earlier. If you work at your business and you know your business isn't going to succeed on its own, why would you think that relationships are? And so it means moments where you have to say the hard thing. You have to hear the hard thing. You have to have really uncomfortable conversations. You have to hold back on apologizing because even though you know if you apologize, it's actually going to fix the problem. Don't apologize if you don't mean it. All of that is hard, hard, hard. And so if you're willing to do the work, then it can be beautiful. But if you go into it thinking it's going to be easy, I don't see how the relationship can last.
Second one, if they lose, you lose.
I think of it like a tennis match. Relationships, a lot of couples I see play tennis as singles. One person's on one side of the net and the other person's on the other side of the net. But only one person can win. And what you end up doing is you hit the ball and you hope that they miss. That's not a partnership. That's not a relationship. That's you hitting the ball, the other person ping-ponging, and now only one of you can win. But in a true relationship, you're playing a game of doubles. You're on the same side of the net. And if I've got a weak backhand, then he's got it. He can hold, right? He can hold space. If he's weak at something, I've got it. And we both got each other's backs. And either way, we win or we lose together, period.
Love that. They can't fix you. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, all your problems. Trust me, I tried to turn to my husband to fix all my problems and it didn't work. So I realized that that's what we do in relationships. And that's a lot of weight and a lot of pressure for your partner to hold. I think they are there to support you on your journey. I think they're there to hold you, hold space for you when you struggle, but their job is not to fix your problems. I think that absolutely is your responsibility and they are there to help you along that journey, but it's not their responsibility to actually do the work. It is yours.
And I think we already touched on this, but we can maybe finish this off. You can't fix them.
Yeah, that's another thing. People find the validation in actually helping other people. And the problem is when you find your validation in fixing other people and they don't want to be fixed or they can't fix themselves, now you don't get your validation and now you feel like a failure. So you can't fix them either.
So this next one I think is really important for people to understand. And that one is, it isn't always 50-50.
Yeah, I think we just think like it should always be 50-50. And it doesn't work out like that. But over time, there should be absolute harmony and balance. So what I mean by that is there are moments where I was struggling. I have had massive health issues. And there was a time where I could barely stand up for more than 5 minutes at a time. I was, you know, losing weight because I could barely eat anything. I was 20 pounds lighter than I was now. And my hair was falling out and my nails were brittle. So you can imagine every day was about me. On the weekend, it was about me because it was about what can I do? What can I eat? Where can I eat? Oh my God, I'm in pain. I need to lie down. So you can imagine when my health issues really fell, it wasn't 50-50. And if you live in a world that you think it should, you can imagine that Tom would start to build contempt or resentment because it wasn't 50-50. But then it ends up over time weighing out because then there was another time when my husband was dealing with a business issue and he was working 120 hours a week. Just do the math. I literally wasn't seeing him. He was awake or working, period. And so even when that, like I was waking up by myself because he would wake up early. I was going to bed by myself because he was staying up late. But I don't think, well, hang on a minute. It should be 50-50. I need my equal time. It's like, well, no, you have to give each other grace. And over time, it should absolutely all come out in the wash. And if it doesn't, then you really need to address it because you don't want a relationship that's one-sided. But you definitely don't want to go into a relationship always thinking that it's going to be 50-50 because life just doesn't work out like that.
And life doesn't work out with this next one either. And the last one is there's no happily ever after. Happiness is a byproduct.
I think of, have you heard of the quote, "This too shall pass"?
Yeah.
Okay, the Taoist quote. So this too shall pass. People say it in times of difficulty. But the truth is, I also say it in times of happiness. We all sometimes reach a moment of happiness, like we go on vacation and everything's amazing and you're in this beautiful place and you're with, you know, everything's like all the roses. And so you then make that moment the baseline that you live by. And so now your baseline is so high that it's so hard to keep achieving happiness. And so for Tom and I, we live life together. And the byproduct is sometimes going to be moments of distress. And it's also going to be moments of utter beauty and happiness. But if all we do is strive for the happiness, of course, we work towards fulfillment. But the happiness part, I think, has set so many people up for disaster because we assume that if we're not always happy, then we're doing something wrong. So happiness is the byproduct.
If one of your closest friends who's single came to you tomorrow and was like, "Lisa, I'm struggling. I can't find somebody. I'm trying to date, trying to meet somebody." Knowing what you know, where would you direct them? Would you direct them to go out? Would you direct them to dating apps? Like, where would you kind of point them to?
So I would have, if you'd asked me this question a week ago, I would have said dating apps because all of my friends now are on dating apps and I know people that have met on dating apps. But then I interviewed the Gottmans. And Dr. John Gottman said to me yesterday, which blew my mind, he said, look, actually opposites attract, right? But they actually attract. And they did this whole study. It's called like the T-shirt sniff study. I don't know if you've heard of this, but they take men's T-shirts and they make women smell them. And they have to rate on a scale of like 1 to 10, would they, like, are they attracted to that person or not? Just by smelling the T-shirts that the guys have worn. The conclusion is, it was something like with 90% accuracy, people chose T-shirts that had like smells and genetics that were actually completely opposite to theirs.
Wow, really?
Yes. And they realize it's because you end up, if you look at biology, the more diversity you have, the stronger you are. And so if you're looking at, let's say, gut microbiome, for instance, if you've got more diverse gut microbiome, then you can handle illness better. You can handle food poisoning better. You can handle all these things better. And so our bodies biologically search for things that are opposite to us. But what do they do on dating apps? They match you with someone that's exactly like you. So literally when Dr. John Gottman told me this yesterday, I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. So he actually said, you're better off doing random selections on dating apps than you are trying to match people exactly. So I know actually I haven't even given you the answer because I'm literally, you've caught me almost in real time going, I don't know what to suggest because I thought dating apps were the answer. But according to Dr., you know, John Gottman, it's not. So, the thing, like knowing that, I think a big key thing that I would say is always working on yourself, making sure that you never lower your standards, making sure that you never lower your values or who you're looking for in order to try and seek a certain feeling. That's, I think, where you end up going full circle back into relationships that don't serve you. And so making sure that even while you're on this journey, always checking in with yourself, always checking into making sure that you're living in integrity, that you're keeping your values and your morals aligned with who you are. Because I do think that ultimately, at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is how you feel about yourself when you're by yourself. And when you're by yourself, do you feel good about yourself, yes or no? And if you change your values and morals in order to try and get to the guy or get to the person, you'll end up not feeling good about yourself.
The last question I have for you is this. Like a lot of people who have listened to you and Tom talk about your relationship or heard the story of how y'all have grown together, evolved together, all the peaks and valleys, they would know that, you know, one of the things that has really made this thrive is trust. Like you bet on Tom, he bets on you. You guys trust each other to just take these wild risks in business. And you just believe in each other so much and believe in the mission that it's going to succeed and that everything's going to work out. A lot of people have a hard time just having basic trust with their partner. How have you developed this radical trust, not only in yourself, but in your relationship with Tom?
Yeah, trust is a big thing. And I think, so A, you have to build it over time. So don't just blindly trust someone because someone tells you something that makes you think. It has to be shown over time. And so what I mean by that is over time with me and Tom, you start to share your vulnerabilities. You start to share your insecurities. And in moments where they can actually use it as a weapon, which is usually in a fight, let's be honest, do they use it? That one moment where you know, or even yourself, you know you can shut them down right now. Let's say that your partner's upsetting you and you just want them to stop. You know you can shut them down by using this vulnerability that they've shared with you. And the question is, do you actually do it? Do they? And in 23 years, not once have either of us ever done that. And so that's been a part of us building the trust. Secondly, I think it's really important to just agree, like, do we look for trust in this relationship? Is that important to you? And so for me and Tom, it is so important. So we have the whole debate. I'm not sure how you feel about this. I actually love to hear your thoughts on, do you check your partner's phone? Should you have the right to be able to pick up your partner's phone and look at it? Do you have the right to go into your partner's DMs and read them? And the question is, the second Tom asks to look, there's a problem. I'm like, why don't you trust me? That's the problem. It's not checking my DMs. It's not checking my phone. By all means, like I have no problem with it. But why are you asking? Why don't you trust me? What is it that I've done that makes you not trust me. And that's the problem. But people try just go straight into, well, why do you want to check my phone? Because I don't. Okay, well, here's my phone. See, I'm not right. And they don't actually address the fact that they don't trust each other. And so Tom and I use this analogy, and I really mean it to my core. Over time, Tom and I have built so much trust in each other over 23 years of moments that either of us could have broken the trust and we didn't, to the point now where I really mean this. I trust my husband enough that if he walked into a green room, let's say he goes on this show and he walks into a green room and I'm not there and there's a naked woman in the room, he could get away with it. I would never find out. Do I trust that he would turn around and walk out that door? And the answer is yes. Now, look, that absolutely leaves me open to being hurt. I completely get that. And if anyone's listening right now who has had that level of trust and they've been betrayed, I get it. They're probably screaming at me, don't trust him. I get it. But it hasn't happened to me. And I don't want a relationship where I don't trust. And so I have given myself over completely. If someone showed me a photo of Tom with his arm around someone walking in the street, you know what the first thing I would do? I'd be like, wow, maybe that was a fan that was really upset. And, you know, he was consoling them. I don't know the context of the photo. So the thing I'm not going to do is go straight to he's cheating. The first thing I'm going to go to is 23 years of knowing Tom. I know he's compassionate and empathetic towards people. So that's going to be my first reaction. But I'm still going to ask him about it. I'm still going to talk to him about it. I'm still going to, you know, say, hey, people thought you were cheating on me. I'm still going to have that honest conversation. So yeah, I know that I'm opening myself up to being hurt. I know that I'm opening myself up to potentially, you know, having a husband that cheats on me. But that's the choice I've actually consciously made. And I'm very honest with him. And I've said to him, if you do, I'll never be able to trust again, because I so blindly trust you that if you ever cheated on me, I don't know if I could ever come back from that, because I don't know what signs I would miss.
And I totally agree with you. I think the checking the phones, it's like if there's a purpose for it, if you've caught somebody cheating, and part of the accountability in the relationship is like, okay, like we're going to work on rebuilding trust. Part of that is I have access to your phone now for X amount of time or whatever until we rebuild the trust or whatever. I think that's one thing. But just randomly, like without any kind of reason, being like, I want to check your phone, I think it's so important, like you said, to get to the root of why there's mistrust there and figure out, like, has this person done something that has, you know, warranted you a reason to want to see like their DMs or whatever. I want to read you this quote that Simon Sinek posted today. I'd love to get your thoughts on this, because it kind of touches on something you just said. He said, the best definition of love I've ever heard: love is giving someone the power to destroy you and trusting they won't use it.
Absolutely. I don't know if that's just what love means to me, but I think that that's the recipe that makes a successful relationship, is that you are giving them the power, right? Like I want to give myself over to my husband. It's important to me to do that. And that's my decision. But I just want to have utter compassion for anyone that's listening where someone has abused that. And I understand, and I can only imagine how difficult that is to come back from. But the one thing that I wouldn't do is get into another relationship and then just not trust them. I think trust is a fundamental part of a successful relationship. And if you don't have it, your relationship won't succeed. So I wouldn't have to then find ways, if Tom was to do it and I was to, you know, find another relationship after that, I would insist on finding ways to get my mindset right in order to understand and believe that I can trust this person again. And I would do it in stages, and I would do it slowly, and I would express, I would be honest, I would be open about the hurt that I'd had before. To your point, I would say, hey, this is what I need, because this is what happened to me in the past. This is what I require in order for me to have this successful relationship with you. I totally understand if that's something you don't want to deal with, no pressure, but this is what I need in order to rebuild trust in a new relationship that I had lost from my past one.
Lisa Bilyeu, this has been incredible. Thank you so much for everything that you shared. Thank you so much for your knowledge, your wisdom, your vulnerability, your openness. I think my audience is going to really get a lot of value out of this conversation. If they want to check out Women of Impact, if they want to follow you, if they want to buy the book, where's the best place to do that?
Thank you so much. So I've got every detail of how I've gone from being super insecure to building my confidence in business, my relationship, in my book, Radical Confidence. So go check that out. And my show, Women of Impact, is definitely where my heart is. That's where I learn and grow and try and serve. So, you know, you can find that on YouTube, or if you're listening on podcasts, I'm on podcasts everywhere. And then Instagram is where I do a lot of my my personal like messaging kind of to, you know, almost like, you know, the quick snippet quotes that give people that daily empowerment. So you can go over to Lisa Billy over there. Thank you so much for this, by the way. I've had so much fun.
Likewise, I've enjoyed chatting with you. It's great to see you and catch up. I think you're amazing. I think the world of you and Tom. So really excited for my audience to check out this episode, and I think they're going to get a lot of value out of it. So thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate you.